I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. So do you know what's in the herbal supplements you take? The New York Attorney General's office tested popular name brand supplements and found that most of them did not contain the ingredients on the label. For instance, there was no ginkgo biloba in the bottle labeled ginkgo biloba. Instead, it contained garlic, rice, spruce, and asparagus. There were similar problems with St. John's wort, ginseng, echinacea, and valerian root. The supplement industry is a multi-billion dollar enterprise, and it does not have to abide by the same guidelines that the FDA has established for pharmaceuticals. Now there are calls for more regulations so consumers know what they are ingesting and that the health claims on the products are accurate. Today on Radio Times, we look at the herbal and dietary supplement industry, the growing popularity of supplements, and issues involving quality, effectiveness, and safety. And let me introduce our two guests. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Sarah Erush. She's clinical manager in the Department of Pharmacy at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. One of her responsibilities is to coordinate the safe and effective use of medications within the hospital. And Sarah Erush, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And joining us by telephone is Anahad O'Connor, a reporter for the New York Times, covering health, fitness, nutrition, and epidemiology. He writes for the Science Times section as well as the paper's health and wellness blog. His articles about supplements helped to spur the New York Attorney General's investigation. Anahad O'Connor, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. If I could begin with you, Sarah, this is such a basic question, but as I was telling you before we went on the air, the more homework I was doing on this, the more I felt like we need a definition. What is a supplement?
It's a really good question. Everybody thinks of herbals as supplements, but the multivitamins that people take, minerals, herbs, botanicals, glandulars, enzymes, organ tissues, all those things fall under the umbrella of supplements, according to the FDA.
And Anahad, I'm curious about what got you involved in writing the series of stories that you did about the supplements industry.
Well, you know, I think it started from sort of a personal interest and curiosity. Like a lot of Americans, you know, I have used supplements myself. You know, studies show that one out of two Americans use at least one supplement every single day. And, you know, as a science and health reporter, I would look for research on the different, you know, supplements I was interested in. And then the more I started digging, the more I was shocked to find that this is a loosely regulated industry and there are a lot of people who suffer injuries as a result.
And it is, when he says it's a loosely regulated industry, Sarah, it's sort of semi-quasi falls under the FDA. How does that work?
An excellent question. The Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act back in 1994 really made this, at that point in time, an unregulated industry. The goal was to allow Americans to choose whatever they wanted without all the heavy regulation up front before a product could be put on the market. Sadly, there were a lot of quality issues that came from that. And in 2007, there was an amendment to that regulation that said, no, these supplements actually do have to be regulated. They have to be – the companies who produce them have to be registered with the FDA, and the FDA's intent is that they will audit those companies every 3 years and that the company will have to respond to any problems that they find. Sadly, because the industry has really just exploded, the FDA has no way of keeping up with that, and it still hasn't changed the issue that a supplement can get on the market without any proof of safety or efficacy or quality before it actually hits the market. So they have to register with the FDA, but the FDA does not need to review that product before it hits the market. So there's a lot of bad things that get on the market, and the FDA really has to spend their time chasing them down. Because of the size of the industry and the lack of funding in the FDA to do this, it's really impossible for them to follow through on everyone. So it's a little bit of a wild, wild west in that there's a lot of products out there that the FDA has never yet had a chance to take a look at.
Anahad, let me go back to you, and even going back to some of the specifics, and this is the Attorney General's office in New York looking at things like ginkgo biloba, St. John's wort, ginseng, some of these very popular herbal supplements that people are taking. And according to their findings, what was in the bottles was not what was on the label, not even close.
Yeah, I mean, they looked at about a half dozen of the most popular herbal supplements on the market. So we're talking about products that altogether account for roughly five to six billion dollar segment of the dietary supplement industry. And they looked at products sold at the biggest drugstore and retail chains, Walmart, GNC, Target, Walgreens, and they found in many of these cases that there was no trace of these herbs, despite what they said on the label, and they found other things instead that were obvious cheap fillers. So they found crushed up houseplants and powdered rice and wheat and other things that could be allergens for people. And they found, you know, powdered asparagus. They found, you know, spruce, which many people would know as Christmas trees. I mean, they just found really things that just ran the gamut. So it was very shocking.
It is very shocking. And it also, they found about 80% of what they tested proved to be completely, what, fraudulent?
Yeah. I mean, as the one of the prosecutors in the office said, you know, when they tested these things, a lot of it in some cases was essentially just sand. You know, it was just powdered, just things that really ran the gamut. All these plants that and ingredients that were not listed on the labels, everything from rice to wheat, you know, things like legumes and nuts and beans. Just all these things that people who go into the stores to buy these supplements would never imagine are actually in the pills. You know, you buy and these were all single ingredient products. So they tested a bottle that said echinacea, you know, and nothing else. But when they actually tested the pill, there were, you know, in some cases, five different things on the label, but no, or five different things in the capsule, but no echinacea. So
And what was the, and this was looking at four, you know, pretty name brand retailers, GNC, Target, Walgreens, and Walmart. What have they done in response to this? And it was really a cease and desist coming from the Attorney General's office in New York.
Exactly. So, you know, the responses varied. The Attorney General's office first off said, you know, the results of our investigation show that, you know, consumers are being misled and that, you know, what is on the label is not in the actual pills and products. And so you need to pull these things off the shelves. And they sent them specific lot numbers and specific products and brand names. And all of the companies said that they would, you know, abide by the Attorney General's request to remove the products from the shelves. Some did it more quickly than others. Some only did it in New York State.
Right.
Others pulled the products nationwide. Some of the stores, you know, said we will pull them just to honor the Attorney General's request, but we stand by, you know, our products. And the Attorney General has been having sort of a back and forth with these companies.
Indeed. Let me turn back to you, Sarah, and I'm sure for people who either read Anahad's stories or are hearing this for the first time and take supplements, should they be throwing their, you know, supplements in the trash as they listen to something like this?
I think they should be very cautious of what it is that they're purchasing, and I think that's the biggest concern that we've had, particularly at the hospital, with patients come in with their supplements and want to continue to take them when they're in the hospital. That is our concern. We don't know for sure what's in these products, and patients can be admitted for a variety of reasons, and our concern might be that there might be something actually in the supplement that's making them ill. Huh. So we prefer when they come into the hospital that they stop taking them entirely. And it's sometimes very hard to wrestle these away from them because they're very vested in them. I think this information is good for patients to hear about or the consumers to hear about. Should they throw them away? That's an excellent question. And I think it leads to the question of how can a consumer determine what is a quality
exactly.
product? And there are certain things that they can look for that will prove that that product is quality. And I would say in this particular case, if they don't see, for example, the USP verified seal of approval on that product, I would be very cautious about using it. And I would probably recommend that they do, in fact, dispose of it.
That's something that you wrote about, Anahad, this USP verified label. It needs to be black and yellow just to make sure that it is, that the verification is coming from USP. Can you flesh that out for us?
Yeah, so I think there are really two big issues that consumers should keep in mind. The first is that, you know, because of the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994, these products don't have to be tested for, you know, safety and efficacy. So if you're buying, you know, a lot of these products, you're sort of, you know, doing it on faith that these herbal products will actually do what they say and that they'll actually make a difference for you. And that's one issue. Then the other issue is you know, whether they actually contain what they say. So if you want to, you know, put your faith in these products, you know, can you be sure that if you're buying a bottle of echinacea or you're buying a, you know, a multivitamin, that it actually is what it says on the label? And that's where USP Verified comes in. That's a third-party certification organization that tests these products independently. And so if you, you know, want to put your faith in these products, you know, that's one thing you can do to get some reassurance that you're actually getting what you're paying for. And so you can look on these product labels for the USP Verified symbol. For a lot of sports supplements, there's another verification third-party verifier called NSF. That's another verification symbol you can look for. But the problem is that there are, you know, tens of thousands of supplements on the market, and only a very small percentage actually submit their products for third-party verification through these, you know, third-party organizations. So the vast majority of these products, you know, it's just the company saying, you know, that, that we've tested these products ourselves and trust us.
So it's kind of a voluntary system, Sarah, then.
It's a voluntary system,
Absolutely.
And one thing I know from the hospital, reading an article that you co-authored, is that if patients in the hospital want to continue to take their supplements, you have them sign a waiver.
Exactly. It's something rather unique that we've done at a children's hospital, and it stemmed from the fact that we did have several patients admitted where we really were able to trace down the fact that part of their medical problem was being caused by the supplements they were taking, which was one of the things that alerted us to the fact that these products are potentially unsafe. So we ask that patients, when they are admitted to the hospital, that they put the supplements aside during the admission, just as a way of clarifying what's going on with them. They're there because they have a medical problem to be treated. We want to rule out this is maybe a potential cause of the problem. We do have patients and families who are insistent that they get to continue their supplements while they're in-house, despite what we try to educate them about. And in that case, we will have them sign a waiver that says that they are aware of the risks of taking these products and they still want to continue them anyway. And then we require that they purchase them and that they administer them to the patient while they're there as well, because, frankly, we don't want to be responsible for purchasing those products, because lots of times we can't find quality products that are that particular brand that they want. And we also, the nurses are very uncomfortable administering products to patients where they're not certain what the quality of the contents of the product are. So that waiver is really telling the family, you are taking full responsibility for this because we are really nervous about what you might be using.
Well, in this hour of Radio Times, what is in a supplement and do they work? And that's Sarah Erush, clinical manager in the Department of Pharmacy at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, joining us by telephone, Anahad O'Connor. He's a reporter for the New York Times, has been covering health, fitness, nutrition, and epidemiology. In fact, has been covering the supplements industry for some time now. We asked them both to join us on Radio Times to get us all up to speed on what supplements are and aren't. And you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times if you have a specific medical question that's something you should take up with your physician. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about supplements in this hour of the show. Several things that we are talking about are the ingredients on the label of a bottle of supplements. Are they correct? Are they free of contamination? Do they include drugs that have been taken off the market? Do they do what they claim to do? Who is responsible for oversight, for regulation? And again, Anahad O'Connor and Sarah Erush are our guests. Let me turn, just picking up on what I said, Sarah, and going back to you. As you said, it's sort of under the rubric of the FDA, but I guess it's possible to put these supplements on the market, and then if there are problems and the FDA can get involved, then they do. We can see how that could set up a series of problems. But should there be more testing and regulation and oversight of supplements, especially if what's in the bottle isn't what's on the label?
Absolutely. I think that the big concern that we have here is safety, and safety is what's on the label, really what's in the bottle. And so as far as that regulation goes, I would say absolutely. We should have some sort of requirement that the FDA is able to determine that the product before it is placed on the market is exactly what it says it is. That if it says it has 100 milligrams of vitamin C in it, that it really does have 100 milligrams of vitamin C in it and not a whole host of other things. So I think
and you can't say that today, right?
Right now, they don't have to be able to prove that before they put it on the shelf. The FDA does require that they register with them. Some do and some don't, because there's no way for the FDA to track everybody down and make sure that they do. And the FDA is supposed to audit everyone every 3 years if they're registered. If they're not registered, they can't even find them to audit them. But the other issue is due to the volume of companies out there and the lack of funding at the FDA, it's actually at this point turned out to be auditing potentially every 5 years at best, because since this went into implementation in 2010, there are still some companies that haven't yet had their first audit. So,
oh, wow.
So the FDA is just overwhelmed with the number of products that are out there.
Anhad, you had a piece about a Journal of American Medical Association study, and I'll just quote a couple of lines here, also looking at supplements. You wrote, most of the supplements were marketed for weight loss, exercise, and sexual enhancement, and they were sold across the country at convenience stores, in health food shops, and over the internet. They were found to contain steroids and prescription drugs like Viagra and Prozac and antidepressant. The study also found that several of the weight loss products contained a drug whose name I can't say on the air because I don't know how to say it, but it is an amphetamine-like drug that was removed from the market in the U.S., Asia, and Europe after a clinical trial showed it increased the risk of heart attack and stroke. So the question is, are there dangerous products? I mean, yes, there might be rice and plants and Christmas trees ground up in some of these herbal supplements, but are there things in supplements that are dangerous?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there's really two ways to look at it. You have a lot of your traditional supplements like the herbs and multivitamins, and those have, you know, a lot of problems on their own with the herbal products. You know, we're seeing that often, you know, as we discussed earlier, often they're in some cases contaminated. They don't have what they say is on a label. They may have lots of cheap, you know, fillers. With the multivitamins, it may say, you know, 100 milligrams of something on the label but contain many times that or none of it in the actual multivitamin. And then you have this other segment of the supplement industry, which is the weight loss products, fat burners, the sports nutrition products, the bodybuilding products. And even people that I speak to in the supplement industry say that this is a particularly bad and particularly vulnerable area, because that's where you have, frankly, criminals operating. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, seen many studies, and FDA points this out as well. And as I said, people in the supplement industry, a lot of, you know, experts who study it, independent folks as well, you know, it's been shown over and over again that these products are particularly vulnerable to, you know, being deliberately spiked with prescription drugs. So you have, you know, a lot of the weight loss products may say that it has some kind of herbal, you know, proprietary blend on the package, but then in reality, they put deliberately very powerful prescription drugs in there, and people have no idea that that's what they're taking. You know, you have these male enhancement products that, you know, purport to contain, you know, different herbs. In reality, they're just spiked with Viagra and Cialis. There have been many cases of, you know, protein powders and other bodybuilding supplements that are deliberately spiked with steroids. And this actually, you know, there was a big study a year or two ago that I wrote about by a network of doctors around the country called the Drug-Induced Liver Injury Network. And they looked at, you know, injuries related to this segment of the industry and found that, you know, the rate of liver injuries connected to or caused directly by these bodybuilding supplements and these weight loss products, you know, the rate of liver injuries was just spiking.
Wow.
And just really taking off, because these products are so deliberately spiked with really dangerous things. And I've interviewed patients, you know, who have just innocently gone into, you know, their local GNC or vitamin shop and bought a so-called fat burner off the shelves. And then, you know, a month or two later, they're in the hospital with liver failure because they took something that was spiked with, you know, some drug that wasn't on the label. So this is particularly an area where people have to be very, very careful. And most people say that they should just avoid it altogether.
Well, Sarah, let me pick up on that and call me naive here, but don't we have a kind of truth in labeling laws in this country? I mean, haven't we haven't we gotten beyond this point where you can look at a label and feel confident that what's on the label is what's in the jar or the can or the bottle?
Well, I would echo exactly what Anahat is saying, which is that this is criminal. This is absolutely criminal. And I think a lot of it with the spiking drugs is actually intent, because the product does work well because it has a prescription drug in it. The problem is, by taking a prescription drug that you're unaware of, there can be drug interactions, there can be adverse effects, there can be toxicities, all the things that Anahat was referring to. I think another problem with this industry is the labeling. We at our hospital alone have had problems with bringing in vitamin products that are labeled poorly, and so interpreting what exactly is in the product has been misinterpreted a couple of times. We've had calcium products where one label of the same company's product, one label will say elemental calcium and one will say calcium carbonate, and we can't tell how much of what's in it. And when we call the company and ask them, they're not sure.
Oh, goodness.
So it's very disturbing that they aren't even confident of what they have on the label. So aren't there laws? Yes. Are they being followed? Absolutely not. Again, it's the enforcement problem.
And that's the FDA,
that's
right?
The FDA.
That's the enforcement agency. Let me ask you, I asked you this off the air, so let me ask you on the air, Sarah. So if someone is healthy, they have a balanced diet, they're eating their fruits and veggies and a nice mix of food, do we need supplements?
You know, they absolutely do not. For a normal, healthy person eating a balanced diet, there's something called the satiety factor, that nature has made it that you can eat what you need and you don't eat too much of what you need. So when you think about, for example, megavitamin doses, people who want to take grams of vitamin C, for example, because they have a cold, nature would never let you eat 300 oranges in a day. But you can take a tablet that's equivalent to the amount of vitamin C that you would eat in 300 oranges. So that alone should tell you there's something wrong with this. There's no need to take that much of any supplement. And again, if you are a normal, healthy person with a balanced diet, you should be getting all the nutrients that you need. Nature's been designed that way. So no, I think supplements really should be reserved for patients who have noted deficiencies or some sort of metabolic problem or nutritional issue that they are missing something. And then it should be replaced in an appropriate quantity and not a crazy quantity.
And do you think sometimes people see the word natural and if it says, 100 milligrams of whatever, then 500 has got to be even better
because it's
natural.
Always. If one is good, two is always better.
That's Sarah E. Rush, a clinical manager in the Department of Pharmacy at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Also with us, Anahat O'Connor. He's a reporter for the New York Times, and he has been covering the supplement industry. In fact, his articles about supplements helped to spur the New York Attorney General's investigation into what has been promoted on the labels of some of these supplements, finding that there is nothing whatsoever inside those bottles. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. I'll repeat this again. Also, if you have specific medical questions about your own health and what you're taking, those are questions appropriate for your physician. Let me get David from Cherry Hill to join us. David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, I'm a small gym owner, and I like to pass on good information to my clients, and many of them do take supplements for bodybuilding and weight loss, et cetera. And you haven't been able to mention any brands. I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but basically, is there a place I can go to find a big, fat list of brands that are approved by the organizations that you mentioned earlier, and list of brands to stay away from, or those that have not been approved yet?
Let me put this to Anahat O'Connor, and we were talking about this USP Verified. And Anahat, in some of your article, you did mention a couple of brands. You want to do that?
Yes. So I would say, first off, there's a couple different organizations I would direct you to. So USP Verified, they tend to verify products from the very big supplement companies, because, as we said earlier, it's a voluntary program. But there's another program called NSF International, and they verify a lot of sports supplements, because you have to keep in mind as well that there are a lot of professional athletes and Olympic athletes who have very strict rules on what they can and cannot take. And so, if these athletes want to take a protein powder or some kind of other sports supplement, creatine, they have to be very sure that there, you know, are no steroids or stimulants or amphetamines or things like that in the product. And so NSF International is one of these third-party organizations that will specifically test a lot of sports supplements, so that if you're an athlete or if you're, you know, someone who is interested in using these sports supplements, you can at least go to their website and see which products they've tested. You can see the specific brand names and see what is actually, passing their tests.
So go on to Google them and USP, I guess, verified as well, and they would list the product names. I noticed a lot of questions about that, so that should certainly take care of that. To you, Sarah, what does natural mean as a pharmacologist?
Well, I laugh because a lot of the medications that we have today come from botanicals, from natural products, and we've purified the active constituent out of those products and taken away all the stuff that you don't need. So we've come full circle. Now we're going back to taking the full leaf, shall we say, rather than the active constituent. Sadly, most people think natural just means safe, that if it's natural, it's safe, it must be fine. And then I would say to you, well, arsenic is natural. Mm. And obviously it's not safe if you take it in the wrong amount. And I think that's our big problem here, is that some of these products may be natural, but we're not sure that they're safe. We don't know what the right quantity is. And particularly in this case, we don't know if it's even in the bottle or what else is in there with it. So I think you have to take natural with a grain of salt.
We have a Facebook comment from Rob. It says, funny how people swear to the effectiveness of these homeopathic treatments, and all along they've been gobbling up placebos. And I wonder, Anhad, because you said that you had been taking supplements. That's one of the reasons you got into writing about them. Have you had second thoughts about supplements for yourself?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I was one of the one out of two Americans, who has used supplements. And for example, when I was in college, I was very into exercise and weightlifting. And so, when you do that, you are told that you need protein powder, and that's something that I would take. And, all of my friends would take pre-workout powders and all these things that you see at GNC. There are so many, products that are marketed directly toward young adults, in particular when it comes to, people who are into fitness and nutrition. And, I've certainly wondered, have I taken something in the past, a protein powder or a vitamin that, contained something that I had no idea was in there. So that's something that that I've wondered about. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, after reporting on this area for so long, I've become very skeptical and extremely cautious with supplements. And, I think Sarah's absolutely right, and I would echo what she said. If you have a nutritious diet, you don't really need these things. And, in some cases you may be taking something that your body has no need for at all, because it's already getting what it needs from your diet. And in that case, it's just useless to you. Or in the worst case scenario, it's actually potentially doing harm. And if your body doesn't need it, then essentially it potentially can be harmful. Or at the very least, you're just producing very expensive urine,
exactly,
as people would say.
I was wondering how you were going to actually phrase that, Anahad. We knew exactly where you were going with that. But Sarah, if we're talking about half the population, one in two taking supplements, I mean, there's a reason that people are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that is?
I would agree. Well, I'd like to go backwards a little bit too and talk about the placebo effect. The placebo effect is real. People chuckle, but if you look at medical studies, there is always a response in the group that's getting nothing. There is always a response.
Because they believe?
Because
what?
Something happens if they believe enough that it's going to work, that it does work. So I think that's part of the problem with the supplement industry, is that people think they're going to work, and they will tell you that they work, and they actually might have made a difference in their life, whether it's due to the actual product or due to the placebo effect. I'm not sure.
Right.
I think, there's been a big boon in the United States about health. And so I think that everybody is trying to do whatever they can to be healthy, whether it be to supplement in terms of I'm a super healthy bodybuilder and I want to make myself even better, or I'm somebody who wants to lose weight and I want to find the quick and easy way to do it. I think there's a lot of the publicity around trying to become a healthier population. And as much as I hate to say this, as being a healthcare provider, I think there is also frustration with the healthcare industry, and people feel like they don't get what they need from their providers, or that what they're getting from their providers isn't working well enough. So they want to have some control themselves, and they want to supplement with something else besides the medications they're getting, or instead of the medications they're getting, because they're dissatisfied with their health care. So I think all of those things add up to that.
Anand, about a little bit more than a minute before our second break here, but I was also thinking about all the pharmaceutical ads that you see on TV, and yes, they do list at the end all the terrible things that can happen to you, but at the same time, you're looking at these healthy people living their life. It's kind of sending a mixed message, and we're talking about the supplements industry, but it does raise questions about the more established FDA-approved drugs as well, how they're promoted to the people.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of issues there, and that's something that's been, discussed very, very widely. But, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, people say, oh, you know, there's, you know, why are we focusing on supplements? There are a lot of problems with, you know, prescription drugs and the pharmaceutical industry. And in reality, a lot of the biggest supplements on the market are actually owned by pharmaceutical companies. Huh. So Pfizer, for example, takes in over $3 billion a year from the supplements that it sells in stores, like Centrum, which is one of the most popular multivitamins. You see these little emergency supplements in your local pharmacies. So the supplement industry and the pharmaceutical industry, in some ways, there's a lot of overlap.
Well, let's hold on to that thought there, only because we have to take a very short break. Looking at the clock here, that's Anand O'Connor, reporter for The New York Times. He's has been covering health and fitness, nutrition, epidemiology, and has been covering quite a bit the supplements industry. Also with us, Sarah Erush, clinical manager in the Department of Pharmacy at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Much more after this very short break. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Anand O'Connor and Sarah Erush about supplements. We have an explosion of phone calls, not surprisingly. Something you wanted to add about consumer labs, Sarah, and we talked about people Googling NSF and USP to find out what drugs at least, or what supplements have at least gone through some degree of verification. You want to add consumer labs to that as well.
Exactly. I think consumer lab, for someone who's interested in the industry at all, and it sounded like that gym owner might be a perfect person. It's a small fee per year. I think it's about $25 per year, but you can sign on to Consumer Labs, and they routinely run reports of hundreds of products in different categories that tell you all the different brands of that particular product. For example, it'll run a report of 100 Coenzyme Q products and tell you which ones are exactly what they say they are on the label. And it's an independent laboratory that looks at this, so that you can be fairly confident of their results as well.
Anand, you're up in there in New York, and we've been doing the show in part because of what the New York Attorney General's office did. Why do you think they went after these stores and not after the makers of these supplements? In your reporting, did you find an answer to that?
Yeah, it's actually very interesting. So I initially started investigating herbal products in particular when there was a study a couple years ago that first looked at these products and suggested that, you know, a lot of them did not contain what was on the label. But that study sort of did an anonymous survey of supplements and just bought the scientists purchased bottles from Amazon, from local stores, but they didn't say what the products were. They said that a large number of them had failed their tests. And the Attorney General's office actually read that story, and they said, wow, this looks like, you know, a pretty clear case of consumer fraud. And, of course, this is an industry that's largely unregulated. And when I wrote that story, I spoke to the industry, and I quoted some of the trade groups, and they said, you know, we don't know what these brands are. The names haven't been released, but we can say that these are probably just some bad actors on the fringe of the industry. Most of the big companies, you know, the sort of big products, you can put your faith in those. Those are completely, copacetic. And so what the Attorney General's office did was they specifically went to, as I said, the biggest drugstore chains and the biggest retail stores, and they didn't just test random products. They actually tested the store brand products. So the product, the brand that they tested at Walgreens was Walgreens store brand product. I think there was some other name for it, like Spring Valley or something like that, but it was the Walgreens store brand product. They tested the GNC brand name product, the Walmart brand name product, the Target store brand product. And so that showed that, you know, or suggested that this was not just a problem, you know, restricted to these rogue companies on the fringe of the industry, that it was, you know, potentially industry-wide, and that it spread to the biggest, you know, most dominant supplement companies.
One of the things that you said in one of your stories on HOD was that the scientists who did some of the research that you wrote about did not want to be identified. When, I mean, were they afraid of something?
Yes. Yeah, so they were actually, you know, worried about lawsuits. You know, they were, you know, this is a very, you know, the supplement industry takes in at least $33 billion a year. So there are a lot of people using these products, obviously. But there are also a lot of companies that are making tons and tons of money selling these products. And that's one of the reasons why you have, you know, so many problems with contamination and just outright fraud, because it's loosely regulated. Right. There's a lot of money in it. And so right away, that's an incentive for a lot of companies to cut corners and deliberately defraud people. Certainly, there are some honest companies out there. You know, that's definitely the case. I don't want to tar the entire industry. But there's also a lot of bad apples in this industry, and just a lot of outright criminals. And, you know, it's a very litigious industry. And so these scientists who did the study, they wanted to call attention to this a couple of years ago initially, but they were, you know, frankly fearful of of lawsuits.
Are we also talking, Sarah, about sort of fly-by-night companies? They might come up with a product, put it on the market, then it isn't what it claims it is, and then they take their money, go to the bank, and disappear?
Absolutely. They disappear before the FDA catches on that they're even out there. And that's probably a bulk of the companies out there, which is the most concerning part, that you can't even track them down.
Wow. And they might be sort of just in someone's basement or I mean, some that level of sophistication?
There was
lack thereof?
There was a vitamin B complex product that was on the market in, I believe, 2012 or 2013, where it was contaminated with anabolic steroids. And this was discovered by a physician in Connecticut who realized that all of his female patients who were taking this were developing all these masculinizing symptoms. And he was the one who was able to report that to the FDA. They tracked it down, found the contaminant. And much to my surprise, this was a company that was a one-person company. One person was the president, CEO,
the maker,
production, whatever. So was this being made in somebody's bathtub? I mean, you really have to wonder how that happens.
Let me get Eric from, looks like Kensington, to join our conversation. Hi, Eric. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah. Hey, hello.
Hi.
I'm curious. If I'm a person who's been using the herbal supplements that I've been buying, say, at CVS or other drug stores, maybe for many years even, I was curious, I mean, if I've been defrauded and I spent my money on products where I wasn't receiving the product that was being promoted, you know, to me, or the ingredients that were on the listed on the label, I'm curious what recourse there is for me. You know, who knows, but I've spent thousands of dollars on an expensive supplement for many years. Where's a list of the companies that made these products, and what responsibility are they being asked to take? I mean, a lot of people probably spent a lot of money on these products that were and they were defrauded, and I'm just, you know, it doesn't make sense. Where is the list is one question, of the products and the companies, and just so that in the future, I guess I could, you know,
sure,
whatever, not
sure,
my products.
Well, we are talking about name brand products, and the four companies were, and they're very well known names, Target, Walgreens, GNC, and Walmart. We don't have a lawyer here, but let me see if Anahad can at least address, I mean, if we are talking about fraud or people being defrauded, is there talk now in the Attorney General's office in New York is getting involved? Is there talk about lawsuits?
There have been lawsuits, actually. There have been lawsuits filed all over the country, actually, against some of these, you know, these big companies. There have been some class action suits that are just getting off the ground. So, you know, a lot of consumers are very upset. You know, they're concerned that they've been paying money for these products and not getting, you know, what they've paid for. And so, you know, as you can imagine, there, you know, there have been some lawsuits filed. I forget the specific, you know, attorneys or law firms that that are involved, but there are definitely lawsuits in the works. And then some of these companies, you know, some have complied with the Attorney General's office and are doing what they ask. And they, you know, their defense is, you know, we sell supplements, but we use a contract manufacturer. We, you know, have been given assurances by these companies that we're buying, you know, the products and materials from, that this is what they say they are. And, you know, we've been lied to and misled. And then some of the companies are, you know, saying we stand by the purity of our products and we're going to defend them and we're going to hire our own lawyers and fight the Attorney General's office. So, I mean, it's really shaping up to be a really pitched battle.
Indeed. Yeah, it sounds that way. Eric, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me read two tweets. They're kind of related. I'll toss them to you, Sarah. A tweet from Suzanne. Works in primary care. Any tips for having the supplement conversation with patients? And then a tweet from Imri. How do I explain to friends and family who take supplements the difference between anecdotal evidence and clinical evidence?
That's a good one. I think
it is a good one.
For educating patients, what we've done at Children's Hospital is we did create a patient education sheet, which basically tries to stay out of the fray but list the issues regarding these and primarily the issue with quality. I think people really get up at arms when you start talking about efficacy. And I think that's –
and do they work or not?
And do they work? And that's really another whole topic. I think the bigger concern that we have is, are they safe? And so is what's on the label really what they say they are? So we have created a standard education sheet that we give to patients and sit down and discuss with them about. The concern is really about the quality of the product and how can they find a quality product? Because if you're telling them this is a bad thing to do and they still want to do it, what's the best thing they can do? And that's where we may talk about USP verification or consumer labs or someplace where they can find a quality product. Anecdotal evidence is just that. I mean, I think
it's sort of like placebo in a way.
Exactly.
Right?
And trying to tell people, you know, one person's experience isn't really the scientific method. And that's a little harder to get across to consumers, but I think it's definitely a conversation worth having if you can.
Yeah, let me get Kathleen from Wilmington to join our conversation. Kathleen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I wondered about the new compounding pharmacies that are sprouting up all over the retail areas of local businesses. Can they be reliably asked to analyze the contents of a pill or a capsule that you might wonder about its efficacy?
Yeah, can I toss that first to you, Sarah?
Sure. Not usually. That's really a laboratory issue. You want to send that to some kind of a lab that can do that kind of analysis, and most compounding pharmacies are not set up to do that. In fact, they might actually send their products to a lab to be analyzed to assure that what they're producing is what it says it is. So they might be able to refer you to a lab that could do that for you.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that, Anahad?
I would just, you know, reiterate what Sarah said. And I would also say that, you know, there are some issues with, you know, some of these drugs coming from the compounding labs. I mean, as I reported in my last story, there was an issue in December where this was an issue last year where one hospital in Connecticut actually had a case where there was an infant with a rare blood disorder, and they wanted to give this infant a supplement called citrulline to help with this disorder. And so they got citrulline, the supplement, from a compounding pharmacy, and they were giving it to the infant, and they were seeing that there was no essentially effects on the child. And after a few days of this, they, you know, were sort of dumbfounded, and they decided to test the citrulline product, which said 99.8% pure on the product. And their testing showed that there was zero citrulline in the product. So I think there's an issue there as well. And there was actually a case report on this in the medical literature. But, you know, there have been problems there as well. So.
Indeed. Kathleen, thanks for the call to Radio Times. A number of comments I'm looking here. People are curious about things like melatonin and fish oil. Can you speak to that, Sarah?
I think that the again, there's sort of two issues here. The first one being the quality issue. That's the focus of our talk today. And that really dovetails into safety. And if you can't guarantee what's on the label and you don't know what you're taking, it's clearly not a safe product. The other whole issue that is in the dietary supplement industry, and really one of the primary reasons for DSHEA back in 1994, is proving efficacy and safety. And this is what pharmaceutical companies spend billions and billions of dollars to bring a product to market. Scientific studies are very, very expensive to do. And to prove that a product actually does what it says that it does and that it is safe in doing it takes a lot of time and a lot of money in human studies. DSHEA tried to avoid that, saying you don't need to prove efficacy and safety to put something on the market. So efficacy is a whole other ball of wax, right. And to go out there and find that data is difficult. The other problem with the dietary supplement industry is it's almost impossible to do these studies because we don't have the quality products. If you don't have something that you can guarantee is always 100%, then you can't do a study with it. So you may never have those efficacy and safety studies.
Wow. So you sort of left where we are today.
That's exactly where we are today.
I wonder, too, Anhad, whether – and I'm thinking of all the foods that are now fortified with vitamins and minerals, water that's now fortified, whether we're also getting to the point where people are just completely almost like ODing on vitamins and minerals. Have you looked at that?
Yeah. Actually, I wrote a story about this. Two or three weeks ago, there have been some studies coming out now from, you know, nutrition experts and scientists who are really concerned that Americans are unintentionally overdosing with vitamins and fortified foods. The food fortification program in the United States, you know, started many decades ago, and foods are fortified for very specific reasons. You know, it was shown that, you know, a lot of women, for example, were deficient in folic acid, and so you know, Congress looked at, you know, what foods were these women eating and specifically fortified those foods with folic acid. You know, there were other once prevalent chronic diseases that were linked to, you know, vitamin and mineral deficiencies. And so foods were, you know, fortified with these things, you know, things like iron and other minerals specifically to address those deficiencies in the population, which have largely been addressed. But now you have this explosion of products, you know, things like vitamin water and I can't even remember all the names.
Cereal,
but you walk
breads, all that, yeah.
Yeah, that are just fortified with all kinds of vitamins and antioxidants and things that are specifically marketed for their antioxidant content. You're seeing it in everything from not just the juices and drinks, but the foods even, and you're seeing, you know, products, you know, pumped with caffeine and things like that. And so there have been some studies coming out questioning, you know, how much of this stuff do we really need? And certainly most of the population is not deficient in these things that are being added to the drinks, the B vitamins and, you know, vitamin E and all these things. And oftentimes they're added in levels that are way beyond, you know, the recommended daily values. And what some of these nutrition scientists you know, dietitians have said to me is that they're concerned because there seems to be no rhyme or reason to the fortification of these foods. You know, why is it that a bottle of vitamin water has, you know, two times the amount of B vitamins that you need in a day? Why does it have 120% of this vitamin, 110% of another vitamin? You know, do we really need all of that? And the short answer is most likely we don't. And if you don't need it, then, you know, the question is, what kind of harm can it do? So that's something that we're only now beginning to look at and address.
Well, we have to end our conversation. We could go on. I see we have plenty of callers and people that want to send us comments. My thanks to both of you. Anhad O'Connor, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. A reporter for the New York Times, Sarah Erush, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. A clinical manager in the Department of Pharmacy at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show. And I'm sure there's a lively conversation taking place on our Facebook page. You can check that out as well. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.